Hey, what's going on, y'all? This is Cat Magnus, the propagandist. Today is Wednesday, June 29th, my birthday. Yay! And this is the Awakened Demagogue podcast. Now, I've been gone for a while, and I really needed to take some time to figure out who I wanted to be and what I wanted to do and how I wanted to present myself to you guys. And right now, I find that I want to stick to the basics. I started this podcast really as a way to vent and share my perspective on life and what I was going through at the time, at any given point in time, especially while I was taking care of my mother. This was an outlet for me to just get things off of my chest, and I am a person who does the work for my mental health. I'm in a few 12-step programs. I have a mental health team, and I take these things very seriously. I take my personal, professional, and spiritual growth very seriously. And I think part of the reason why it's been hard for me to stick to this podcast, especially after my life changed and I no longer have actual outside distractions, I think it's because I've lost touch with what I originally intended this podcast to be for, what I really wanted to do with this program. So I'm going to get back to the basics, and I'm just going to focus on me. Like we say in 12 Steps, keep the focus on yourself. You know what I mean? I really want to make it clear that I'm here to share who I am. You know, I really don't care to be another talking head or a pundit about various essential things, even if I would be very good at it. That's not necessarily my goal in life. My goal in life is to be a person who actually practices the craft of various crafts and gets things done for a better world. So what I want to share with you guys today is just a reflection on this past year, right? It's my birthday. And I'm 35 years old today, specifically at 8:43 p.m. My mother used to never, ever say happy birthday to me before 8:43 p.m. because she said you weren't born yet. You weren't born before 8:43 p.m. So why would I say happy birthday to you before 8:43 p.m.? She did that to all of her kids. She didn't. Well, my brothers were born early in the morning, so it didn't matter. But for me, I was born in the evening. So I always had to wait all day. I got happy birthdays from everyone but my mom, and sometimes I even resented her for not saying it. But I always knew at 8:43 p.m., finally, I would be born enough and worthy of the happy birthday from the most important person, the woman whose body I came out of. And, you know, if anyone's wondering my thoughts on the abortion debate and where we are right now with Roe v. Wade, I think the Women's Health Protection Act just needed to scale back on some of the language, and then it could have codified Roe v. Wade and we wouldn't have to deal with this problem right now. Why is this relevant to me? I'm a child who was almost aborted. I was maybe 12 years old or 11. I asked my mom, where's my dad? Why isn't he around? And she told me about the fact that I was a product of a fling and that my father didn't want a child. He said he was too old to raise another child. And they had the abortion appointment scheduled. And she said that on the day of the appointment, her alarm went off. And she was cramping so badly that she didn't get up. She just decided to deal with it. I think that's an interesting conclusion. You know, you decide to go through 9 months of pregnancy and years, decades, and eons of time raising a child by yourself because of one day's worth of cramping. But as I got older and actually took care of her until the day she died, I had to wonder, well, maybe she had an ulterior motive. You know, maybe she actually wanted to keep me for her own purposes, and it worked out for her, and God is blessing me in his own way. So all's well that ends well. Again, the Women's Health Protection Act just needed to scale back on some of the language. Something about having the right to choose whether or not you are going to carry a fetus or a baby to term for whatever circumstance has nothing to do with LGBT rights and gender identity. It really doesn't. I'm sorry. I don't see the direct connection there. I can see how it can be spun and twisted and contorted to push an agenda forward. But as far as getting the real work of just codifying abortion, it got in the way, right? It gets in the way. Even Steve Manchin, Democrat, said, like, it goes too far, and it does go too far. The policy says, basically, that doctors don't have a right to know all of the details as to why a woman is getting an abortion. And I think a lot of people kind of miss the fact that if they don't understand the context, whether you suffer rape or incest, guess what? Sexual intercourse impacts the body. And medical providers need to know what's going on with your body so they know the best way to safely carry out the procedure. So yes, they do need to know if your reason is because you were raped, so they can run a rape kit and do whatever they need to do to make sure it's safe to perform the abortion. They need to know if it's incest. They need to know what genetic markers may be going on or may or may not happen. You know what I mean? Because a lot of people don't understand the nuances of how healthcare works, the politicization of healthcare kind of misses the point a lot, because there's a reason why doctors can't reveal your information. For example, if you smoke marijuana or if you do drugs, and you need to share that with your primary care physician, by law they cannot share that information because you're not there. You know, your doctor, your primary care doctor, isn't a detective, right? They aren't there to put you in jail. They're in there to help you get whatever treatment you need so you can optimize your health, right? So they need to know if you're an addict. They need to know if you're a drug dealer that got shot. They need to know if you smoke weed. They need to know these things so they understand your chemical makeup and what's going on with your body so they can treat you effectively and correctly, right? The same goes for getting an abortion. It goes for any medical procedure. And a lot of people who don't really understand the nooks and the crannies and the nuances of the healthcare profession, I was raised by a nurse and then took care of her till the day she died, so I know things that people would say. Like, I've had people look at me at the hospital and ask me if I was a nurse because I've had to learn things. And luckily, I was blessed with a mother who was a nurse, and she was very good at what she did, so I know things. But your healthcare providers have to know the contextual reason and what's going on around whatever they're doing, whatever procedure they're performing, whatever they are helping you with, so that they don't participate, so they don't risk malpractice because they didn't have all the information, right? So when we get into whether or not a woman should reveal why, maybe you shouldn't have to tell the judge, or maybe you shouldn't have to tell your neighbor, but you do need to tell the doctor who is going to perform the procedure what happened, what's going on, and why, because they need to know what's going on with your body to make sure it's safe, or the safest way to perform the procedure. It's not about stopping you from having the procedure. They need to know that it's safe for you to even have the procedure. What is the best way to carry out the procedure so that you at least have the best chance of living, not just immediately after the procedure, but long term. You know, this isn't a light procedure where it's just, oh, we're going to stitch up a really deep paper cut or something like that. It's not that. You're taking life, or what could be life, or what does not have the potential to sustain life, and removing it from your body. These are two lives at stake here, and one is technically being ended for whatever reason. Stage of development being cut short for whatever reason. Rape, incest, had a bad day, living in poverty, whatever your reason is, as far as socioeconomic, maybe that's not important. But then when you have doctors doing research and they can state this percentage of abortions are due to poverty, well, guess what? They need to know why you're having the abortion so they can add that to the record, so they can have the data that says 60% of abortions or 50% of abortions are because of poverty conditions. And then we can alleviate poverty, right? Because we have the data that shows that this is why people are getting abortions. So, but the Women's Health Protection Act basically says women don't have to tell you why. Well, how can we do what we need to do as policymakers, as policy analysts, as lawyers, as doctors, as whoever we are, as professionals, to serve the public. How can we do our job if we don't have the information? Right? So to make it law that you don't have to share information, critical information that not only helps the medical provider do his or her job, but helps policymakers and special interest groups do their jobs. Well, that doesn't help anyone. So why would that legislation pass? Right? So we have to be, and for the professionals that are my colleagues who are listening to this podcast right now, you have to remember that we have to educate, right? You can't be so caught up on being able to say that we're the smartest person in the room and holding these grudges from our childhood traumas that we do a disservice to the people that we have chosen to serve. It doesn't help anyone to withhold information to the point where everyone in society fears everything because people fear what they don't understand. And if people don't know anything, people are completely ignorant and they don't understand anything, they are going to be afraid of everything. And then we are going to have these ridiculous revolutions or outcries or protests that we see today, these emotionally reactive movements because people have no knowledge. We've created a culture where the jocks and the cheerleaders and the people who have no knowledge and don't need to have knowledge or even talent are praised and they're given millions of dollars and given success, but the people who actually make a difference are demonized, and then they don't even make enough money. If we want economics and money and capitalism to be the main system of incentivization, of incentivizing participation in society, then we have to equally reward those who actually make professional, significant contributions to society. We have to elevate them to the same level, if not above, those who don't have much to offer, right? Like, we got to strike the balance. And if we want to talk about, like, beauty standards and whatnot, there are plenty of beautiful and intelligent people. We see them on the news all the time. We see them as journalists, as thought leaders. You know, you can't be a famous CEO without being able to look good and look the part. I mean, seriously. Like, so it's not as if these things are mutually exclusive. They're not diametrically opposed. You know what I mean? You can be beautiful and have talent and be good at business and actually make a difference in the world. It's okay to actually have a knowledge base that is valuable and helpful to society. It is okay if you are a beautiful woman or a good-looking, a handsome man who understands himself or herself, or however you identify. It's okay to look good and do that and read books and have an education and know things and do something with the education. And that's something that also frustrates me. You get people like Elon Musk, who dropped out of a PhD program, and yet he bashes education. And it's like, but you have to have at least a master's degree to even get into a PhD program. So you are an educated person. You're educated in the field that you built a business in. And then you go and push this narrative that education doesn't matter, but you're literally planning on colonizing Mars. And you can't do that without an education in science, in STEM in particular. Seriously? Like, he's making it seem like he has nothing but a high school diploma and he has to at least have a master's degree. Ridiculous, right? But these are the narratives that we're pushing to cater to a dumbed down society that says it's better to be dumb, it's better to be ignorant, it's better to spend your time and your energy worried about likes and clicks and going viral than it is to actually cultivate who you are as a person. It is more valuable to go viral and get really big ad deals than it is to just make a difference in people's lives, to solve a problem, to cure cancer. And it's not like we don't have, black women in STEM going around doing their press tours, talking about how they have used their knowledge of physics to develop a laser-based treatment to eliminate tumors. I forgot her name, but I saw a clip of her on it, like on TikTok or something. But it was really cool. You just like Google like black woman physicist cures cancer or something like that. something like that. Hopefully you'll be able to find it. But we don't praise these kinds of stories enough. We were talking about the Kim Kardashians, and that's not to say that she isn't doing her part. I mean, she's finding ways to hustle and do more than just be a good-looking influencer. You know what I mean? And you can't be completely, I mean, you can't really be stupid and be good at business. So there's that. But the narrative that we push around it is anyone who looks good, anyone who does anything can and will have more success than someone who reads, than someone who's educated. And we need to elevate, you know, we need more Neil deGrasse Tysons in the world, even if it's a woman, good Lord, even if it's a woman. We need more, right? We need more shows like Stargate SG-1, where we have Samantha Carter characters who are doctor of astrophysics and still one of the most badass people on the special operations Air Force teams. You know what I mean? Leading the charge, leading the way. We need more representation, not just of people of color or women, but people who are educated from whatever country, whatever nationality, whatever ethnicity, and whatever gender identity. We need more representation of intellectuals doing badass shit, because guess what? The intelligence community it's not about gossip. It's literally about being the smartest person in whatever room you walk into and being able to get out of it alive. It is literally an intelligence community. It's literally a community of people who are highly intelligent. And guess what highly intelligent people do? Read, comprehend, and talk about things like science and God and philosophy and weapons. But not just whether a pew-pew goes pew-pew or pow-pow, but the actual science and the mechanics and what makes it up and what atoms and what raw materials minerals even are a part of the process of creating that weapon or creating this new resource or building new energy. And we see all these seemingly big discoveries that just appear to be larger than life, and they're really not that large, and they're not larger than life. They're just a bunch of people who aren't afraid to read books and experiment with things and find something that works. And you get your Gary Vaynerchuks and your other successful people who dumb it down to the point where it's like, just do something over and over and see what results you get. But let's be honest about what that is. It's called the scientific method, right? And you develop a hypothesis, and then you do the research, and you experiment with that over and over and over, and you monitor your results. That is the scientific method. We are all scientists. We all have the potential to be scientists and creators of our own lives and creators of new things in this world. And we have the certified scientists who actually work in the higher sciences, and then we have the social scientists who may work in business or may work in other social sciences and research. And then we have people who are in business that don't even necessarily realize that they themselves are scientists. Chefs are freaking chemists, for crying out loud. I mean, seriously? Let's be honest. Some of them are biologists and chemists, if you really think about it. Especially the ones who are organic and growing their farms. I mean, seriously. Seriously. Farmers are biologists. Geologists. Right? But we don't treat them like that's what they are. And yet you can't really, I mean, hell, healthcare professionals are biologists, right? I mean, biology is not just about the physical anatomy. It's about everything in the universe. When you take a biology class, not only do you learn how to, the workings of the body by dissecting a cadaver, but you also learn how to cultivate plants, greenhouses, right? And then if you want to, like, really cultivate the entire landscape of a place, you kind of need that geology so you understand the whole ecosystem where you are, right? And how to manipulate that, how to understand that, how to live with that, right? Like, we're all scientists of some sort, right? And I think that is something that needs to come forward in the public narrative. Like, we're all scientists. It's just choosing what we want to study. Science is the study of truth. Aren't we all trying to figure out the truth of something? Hell, that's what the whole whistleblower slash conspiracy community is all about. They literally call themselves truthers. right? It's all about finding the truth and doing rigorous study and analysis. Like we all have the potential to do these things. It isn't just something reserved for a few. There are a few who take it more seriously and want to become professionals in that, and that's where education and the higher sciences and the degrees come in. But we are all scientists at a very basic level, and I think that needs to come forward. Instead of saying certain people who study STEM, which is mainly like technology and chemistry and engineering, we keep trying to make it seem like it's just something mathematics, you know what I'm saying? Like it's something special. But when you really think about it, anything that we do applies to scientific method. Anything that we do over and over and over to understand what results that we get is application of the scientific method. And if that is all, if all of life is application of the scientific method, then we are all scientists. We are all STEM majors in some way, shape, or form. But we have this focus on STEM because that's what makes the most money. But if we look at actual life itself being science, and we are all scientists learning and exploring and understanding life for ourselves, and philosophers developing our own worldviews so that we can create, co-create, and coexist, I mean, we're all pretty damn smart, aren't we? That's why street smarts are more valuable than book smarts half the time, because it takes street smarts to survive. Book smarts might get you a job, but street smarts help you survive, and you are one hell of a beast if you're like me and you have both. Why is it so hard to find someone who has both? I don't know, because I'm the person with both, so I can't. I think everyone has both. You know, it's so basic to me. I think everyone has both. But, I mean, sometimes I learn the hard way that not everyone does. So, in the next segment, I'm going to get more into a personal share. I want to share about my experience with being in a psych ward recently and exploring what it means to embrace mental illness and or mental and behavioral health. All right, y'all, round two. So in the last segment, I got into the whys, wherefores, and my thoughts on how everyone in the world is a scientist if we allow ourselves to understand how we apply the scientific method every day, every minute, every hour of life, and how we draw conclusions, especially just the path, just the journey of growth, right? Just the journey of personal growth is itself a science experiment. I also got into my thoughts on the abortion debate and the Women's Health Protection Act, how that can be improved to just kind of solve the problem. You know, I'm a person who likes to solve problems instead of talk about them endlessly. Go figure. Heaven forfend, we actually solve the problems. But right now, I just want to get into an experience that I had recently. I was admitted to a psych ward. I've suffered suicidal ideation since the age of 12. And I had a moment where I was frustrated with dealing with the inner workings of dealing with people in the government and the things that can happen when your past comes back to haunt you. I didn't have a dream contract, but I did have a dream opportunity that was sabotaged partly by my own paranoia and willingness to be honest, and partly by the fact that people from my past who they themselves were criminals just decided to kind of come back and make the past haunt me because they didn't like the fact that I made life happen for myself without them. And I guess what I want to do is reflect on what it means to have grown up in Atlanta. Now, a lot of people think they know me and learn the hard way that they don't. So let me give everyone an opportunity to know the truth about me, Felicia S. Gooden, M.S. Born in Baltimore, Maryland, to a family that comes from New York. At the age of 6 years old, my mother moved myself and my two brothers, or at least one of my brothers, to Stone Mountain, Georgia, in the metro Atlanta area. Now, this is a place where I grew up being told, stop talking with that country accent. Like, my mom was from Hilburn, raised in Queens. My brothers are raised in Queens. And then they finished high school in Baltimore. Like, I don't come from safe and, I don't come from weak, punk-ass people. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't raised, you know, mom raised a soldier, not a bitch, right? And for some reason, people that I grew up around interpreted my staying out of trouble and not walking around beating the hell out of people and damn near killing them or trying to kill them as a form of weakness. So yes, I did endure a lot of bullying. I'm not the type to really go around talking. I mean, I do talk shit. Like, that's like one of my, like, I talk shit, but I don't talk shit in the sense that I'm trying to provoke chaos. I'm more of a comedic shit talker, you know what I mean? I make a lot of jokes. I'm really sarcastic, but I'm not the type that really want to just go around trying to start fights because I'm angry or whatever it is people are going through when they do that. And you know, because I'm generally a peaceful and funny person, people think that means I'm weak. And it's like, okay, well, the consequences of killing everyone aren't worth proving myself to people who glorify hood life when I spent my entire childhood going back and forth between Atlanta and New York going to funerals because one of my cousins may or may not have been killed by her husband, and another cousin died of this, and then another, then coming up here to see my family, and someone just, you know, I've been surrounded by drugs and drug trafficking and human trafficking and all that my entire life. It is so normal for me, I don't even realize that I may have a problem. Like, that is how normal it is for me. But people in Atlanta never saw that side of me. And I didn't go, you know, I don't go around bragging about that. That's something that people in Atlanta do. They like to brag about things and flex and all that stuff. My family are like the real deal. So we don't just go around bragging about that. It's not just something you do. Right, but for some reason Atlanta thinks that it can't exist unless they saw it themselves or they got to participate and be goofy and fuck it up or something like that. So whatever, you know, I grew up with my mom saying, oh, they're just a bunch of wannabes. And I'm thinking it's like in New York talking about Atlanta because Atlanta wants to be New York or the South, right? And then I learned more about like my grandfather, and you know, like, I'm a person who grew up with my mom saying, yeah, and I can't remember which one it was, but she said like my grandfather did time in Sing Sing and my uncle did time in Rikers, and you know, she would say with this like elitist, like, we are that, you know, I'm related to like elite kind of criminals, you know what I mean? Rikers and Sing Sing, you know, these peasants and their DeKalb County and Fulton County jails. We do real time. We commit real crimes. We're real danger, right? Like, I grew up with that kind of energy, right? So it's like, I'm not participating in this lower level. Ugh. I'm not proving myself to peasants. I don't politic with peasants. Do you see where I got myself, guys? I literally work in the defense industry. Okay? I collaborate with Joint Special Operations University sometimes, maybe, almost. Go to their events, at least. And you gotta be nominated to do that. Let that tell you something about me. But no, they wanna go hacking and say, oh, well, then you prove yourself to the streets. Why, when I'm with actual professionals? Certified, educated, and ready to go, and here y'all go with the street shit fucking with me. And you know, they tried it. And for what some people don't understand about Atlanta is that Atlanta is one of the largest human and sex trafficking hubs on the planet. If anybody remembers the year that the Super Bowl was in Atlanta, and the number one conversation about Atlanta at the time was how sex trafficking increased because of the Super Bowl. That's because Atlanta itself is one of the largest sex trafficking hubs on the planet anyway. Anyway, does anyone remember the episode of House of Cards when the Secretary of State was telling somebody that, oh, Atlanta has some of the finest strip clubs in the country. Hello, that's called sex work, trafficking. Atlanta is literally a place where if you are a female and you grow up in Atlanta, you either enter the sex trafficking industry one way or another, or you at least want to, or you think about it. I'm a person that went the sugar daddy route because I didn't want to be fucking everybody, but that, you know, part of me healing my trauma is realizing that I was doing a whole lot of fucking people for free when I was young. And I decided, well, if that's all I'm going to do, I might as well get paid for it. But I don't want to be fucking everybody just to get paid for it. So I'm going to do like one at a time. Maybe I'll find a little love, get a little emotional stimulation. Yeah, that life decided to follow me when I got myself into the space industry. And he decided to stay. Without being present. Like, checking my State Farm account and then seeing that is the number, that the verification number was the number to the phone that he paid for. I hadn't had that number in years, well over a decade, and I damn sure didn't have that number when I got to New York. Why is it in my rental insurance account for where I live now? Way to let me know what kind of power you have, daddy. Now I want more, okay? I'm the weirdo who has shit like that, and I don't get scared. I get turned on, okay? Because I'm like, well, if you can do that, what else can you do? Sir, I need parts, okay? We need to participate in things. Why didn't you tell me that the first time? Things could have gone differently, sir. 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 Things could have gone a lot differently. I need to plug up my iPad. Hold on 1 second. Now y'all listening like, what the hell? We doing it though. Should plug it up before.
Get it in post. Fix it in post, that's what we say. Fix it in post. That's what we say. In the media world, fix it in post. Just fix it in post. Alright, now I'm back. Okay. So, like I said, sir. Sir, could have been having a lot more fun a long time ago, but anyway, you know. I just had to learn that that life wasn't for me. And I wanted to do other things, like sell weapons or something. Space weapons. It's cool. You know? Who don't want to do that? Nah, he want a goddamn say, you know, he need parts. And then it just got really, really toxic. Really quickly, then I'm putting things together. People know each other. He's actually reaching out to everybody I know. He's reaching out to my contact, who was actually supposed to be my mentor. It all got really ugly. All got really toxic. I lost my shit and said, you know what? Stop. If it doesn't stop, I'll stop. What does that mean? That means that you can't do this shit without me. And if you don't let me do what I'm going to do, because I will be nobody's slave, then I'm just going to take myself out. My reason to live died in 2020. I don't have anything to lose, but you have a lot to lose. Me. So, yeah, I threatened to off myself. And they decided to do a wellness, send the police officers to my apartment to do a wellness check the next day. Got that little good cop, bad cop experience. And, you know, the bad cop, he, you know, poked and he prodded. Because I was like, you know, I'm watching TikTok, whatever. And, you know, they're poking and they're prodding and they're looking for things. And they get me, you know, they provoke me and they get me to say what I needed to say and get me all emotionally riled up. Come in, do the whole little throw me up against the wall and handcuff me kind of thing. I'm just saying, like, it's really not that painful. It was a little scary because I'm like, oh, shit. These, and I live in a very racist area, so the first thing I was thinking is like, oh shit, somebody sent these assholes in here to kill me. I'm not doing anything. And then they're like, calm down. We're here to help you. We're helping you. I'm like, are you, motherfucker? I guess. All right. Well, let me play. Let me play along. Give you the bit. Assume positive intent, as my management mentor told me some while ago when I worked at Palisades Mall. So, calm down long enough. I was very upset because I hadn't showered. So I was smelling like I hadn't showered in like a week when it was more like a day. And it was just bad. I was so embarrassed. I don't like it. At least my hair was done though. Like, I mean, like it's done now. Like it wasn't freshly colored. Like if you see it now, like I recolored it, right? So it's nice. But like when the police came, it wasn't nice. It wasn't like the shit was faded and it was looking orange. Like you see now, like it's like purple raspberry. I love it. It's beautiful. But on the day in question, it was like faded red, orange, fake bleachy. But it was looking nasty. I didn't like it. But at least the locks were fresh. At least had something going for me. So they took me to the psych ward and they gently made it seem like I was gonna go home. But no, they admitted me and kept me there for 10 days. But I learned a lot. And what I learned most is that mental health is not something to be ashamed of. And maybe I should say mental illness. A lot of people don't go through with mental health programs, partially because they're unhelpful. And a lot of times because there's stigma, that you're a degenerate, that you're an undesirable, you're an untouchable, you're a leper now because you went to get your mental health checked after everyone in life has bullied you or jumped on you or raped you or abused you or whatever people have gone through that pushes them to a point where they snap. How dare you be human and snap? You know, like heaven forfend, you have the full spectrum of the human experience and it expresses itself, right? Finally, we are at a point in time in history and human development where we can have these conversations more openly. I really like TikTok because that is a place, it just seems like a place for all kinds of misfits and sex workers and people who have been through God knows what to just finally get it off of their chest in a way that they can feel heard and understood and not judged. The thing about mental health, and this is something that I experienced a lot with some of the group therapy at the mental health institution. It was actually the psych ward in the hospital, but either way. Mental health professionals, if any of you guys are listening to this, I need you to understand that as we set standards, right, professional standards for treating those who are suffering or are having a bad time or a bad day, coming in with, like, there was one session that we had where a woman had found, the therapist had found a video of Alan Watts sharing his thoughts, and she praised him for being the guy that brought Eastern philosophy, and she said, now this might be new, and half the people, maybe a few people, 3 to 5 people walked out of the room. Because the first thing she did was insult everybody in the room by saying, this may be new. Have you guys heard of Alan Watts? A lot of people said no. A lot of people said yes. But because they couldn't give her that quizzy back and forth, oh, Alan Watts is this person. Hey, teacher, this is who this is. Because she didn't get that experience, I guess she said, okay, well, this might be new. Like, she was the person who discovered the answer to infection. Like, she came up with how to cure COVID, okay? She had all the answers, okay? And so this might be new to you guys. I'm the top philosopher. I found it. And she spoke to a room full of adults, young adults, older adults, you know, people from 18 to 60. Some people were like in their 60s, 50s, or 60s. And she spoke to all of us as if we were 12. When we were literally all adults. And a good number of us well aware of the philosophies and the perspectives that she presented. Now, this goes back to what I was saying about everyone being a scientist. Because if she had understood that people have these life experiences and are capable of learning from them, without the guidance of her just now figuring out who Alan Watts is and wanting to share a YouTube video, then maybe she could have understood why people walked out of the room. Because, and the thing is, in that kind of scenario, in that kind of setting, when you walk out of the room and you excuse yourself because you don't want to lash out from being insulted, having your intelligence insulted, they'll mark it down as, oh, they're being avoidant, they're being antisocial, they're being this, they're being that, when really, in honesty, in all actuality, you, supposedly a therapist there to help us, have insulted our intelligence, made us feel small, made us feel less than, which is not helpful to the therapeutic process. This is why a lot of people in 12-step programs rely on 12-step programs. And that group understanding of just learning together and healing together. One of the main testimonies I've heard in 12-step programs in the rooms, as we say, is that therapy doesn't work. That their therapists were judgment. Their therapists were judgmental. Their therapists had all the answers and didn't listen. Their therapists gaslit and blamed them for the issues. There was another session when I was in that psych ward where there was a gentleman who expressed that he needed more support so he can get things out and feel heard. And the therapist, the activity therapist, said, well, if it's not doing what you need it to do, then you can leave. What could you have done? And that's this, you know, gaslighting Masonic thing. We'll flip it back on the other person. Keep the focus on yourself. Yes, keep the focus on myself. However, if you, the therapist, are not focusing on yourself to recognize that you aren't doing your job well enough, if a patient is telling you that they need more help, you don't tell them, well, you can leave the room because I'm not going to change and this is the program that I have. Oh, well, I don't know what else to tell you, so you can leave. How do you think that is going to affect the mental health of your patient? Like, we really have to ask these questions, right? Because we're so caught up in this illusion of, I have these degrees and I have this title that I have authority over a person. But the thing about mental illness or mental health and behavioral health is that we are learning to master and have authority over ourselves. And it is not another person's place to try to decide that, well, because I know these things, I have authority over you. And if you don't like my program and if you don't like what I say, then you leave the room. Okay, well, then there's no healing there. There's just more condescension and attack. And people resort to either their drugs or their sex addictions or whatever addictions that they have, or they go back to 12-step programs where they're actually heard. People need to be heard. People need to be understood. That's why best friends and spouses become therapists as opposed to professional therapists, because for some reason, professional therapists don't understand how to be therapists. They're trying to micromanage and be codependent and fix the patient. And that's partially because of the training of the healthcare and the medical field. Their job is literally to try to diagnose and fix. But what they see and understand as diagnosing and treating becomes judging and fixing. There's a very thin line between diagnosis and judgment. There's a very thin line between treatment and fixing. There's a very thin line between caregiving and codependency, and that line is so thin that often it's blurred. A lot of people don't know the difference after a while, and it's troubling. It was very troubling, and I was one of my most fulfilling moments in that psych ward was being able to speak up for that gentleman who was saying that he needs to be heard, and letting the therapist know that it's not so much that he wants to be removed. He's looking for something to be added to the treatment. He needs something added to it, not taken away. See, this Eurocentric world, yes, white people, I'm talking about you and these standards that you have set for everyone, thinking that you know everything because your own inherent genetic racial codependency or whatever it is, your narcissism has you thinking that it's up to you, just the white people, particularly the men, to diagnose and treat when really you're just judging and trying to fix people to be what you want them to be because you have become the best at stealing and deceiving and killing everyone on the planet. Then now everyone must be like you, and if they're not like you and whatever social construct that you create, then they aren't good enough as people, as humans. And it's like, that's not how that works. And how dare that not be how that works? And how dare a woman of color or a male of color or a transgender person be smarter than a cisgender white male who happens to be a Protestant in the room? And then you get the Protestants or the religious and the spiritual white males fighting with the atheist white males, and then no one gets a say because the atheist white male doesn't even believe anyone or anything exists but their brains half the time. May as well, but they have to be the good standing liberal that says everyone has a thing, but half the time they're just white men trying to say the right thing so they can get laid. Anyway, continuing. So, what I learned most in that psych ward is that, you know, a lot of people actually check themselves in. And I've seen, like, TikToks and people on social media sharing their own stories. Like, they just, to get away from the toxicity and the abuse of their home lives or their roommates or their families, that they check themselves in the psych wards. And I met a few people who checked themselves in. One girl was an addict, and she checked herself in to get her fix, you know. And the thing about it is, when you have an addiction, it's a true chemical dependency. You actually have to have that, you have to have that fix or that re-up, or you can actually kill a person, right? So she was in the rehab, she was in the psych ward to get her fix. And then there was another one there that she just had so much drama with her ex-husband or something, she needed to get away. And there's another lady who she just, you know, she made it very plain, very plain, very nice Jewish lady. This is just a place you come to get away and clear your mind. And, you know, there's another person who works in social work, and she was upset with the whole program because she had all the answers as to how a mental health retreat should work. And, you know, there are different mental health retreats, and I need to look into whether or not that is actually covered under health insurance. Because if we have these, I would like to see psych wards completely replaced by mental health retreats. Like, I mean, we have these luxurious rehabs because we're finding out that people are just so stressed and overwhelmed with this insane society that we have created and continue to participate in that is literally driving everyone insane, and we just need a fucking break. And we have these luxurious rehabs, we have these nice luxurious mental health retreats, so why don't we have these psych wards also be luxurious and a place for people to go to get their medications recalibrated, take an actual break, be comfortable, feel like they are more than who and what they are. And I think we're on the cusp of that. Especially the more that I listen to the fellow, as some would say, inmates. because we know in the legal world that psych wards are always a preferred alternative to prison or jail. So it's a nice... It was an eye-opening experience to see that people will just choose that. Like the homeless person who chooses to commit petty crimes to go to jail for 3 hots in a cot. You know, we need to get away and have a little peace of mind. You know, I was running out of food, so it was nice to have someone else cook for me and bring me my food. Although, they feed the hell out of you in that place. Good grief, you get snacks and stuff. It's like, you feel like a kid all over again. And it was a nice little break. It was a nice little getaway. Not a luxurious getaway, but it was a nice opportunity to just kind of break away from everything that was surrounding me in the outside world. It was a nice place to go to say, okay, well, at least I'm safe in here for right now, somewhat. Although Mr. Man had ways of, you know, letting me know he was there too. Because, woo, people with power are powerful, ain't they? And they can get to you if they want to. You, what is it, Gorilla Zoe in that song Lost? Like, what did he say? There's no one to talk to. There's nowhere to run to. No, that's not the part. He basically said, if they want you, best believe they will find you, right? Like, if they wanted you dead, he would be, okay? So if you're still living, breathe, right? But then it's also kind of like, but what day will they decide to want you gone? So there's definitely that part that leads to people's paranoia. Anyway, so the life, man, the life is real. And it does follow you. And once you get a taste of it, it's not even about, you know, like when you can't unsee things, right? So it's like, once you see a little bit, well, you can't unsee it. And my contribution to it was, one, reaching out, thinking that the past was the past. You know, my problem is I overestimate people. I think they're smarter than they are. I think they have higher and more ethical standards than they have the capacity to develop. I think they have the ability to separate personal from professional. I think that people can do all of these seemingly superhuman things. Apparently, they must be superhuman things. And I get myself into trouble because people aren't as smart as I want to believe they are, and they aren't as morally and ethically driven as I would like to believe they could be, and they don't have the capacity to be more than what they choose to be on any given day of the week. So I get myself into trouble. People think that I'm naive, but really I just expect more out of people because it's so basic for me and who I am. I think that others have the capacity. Yeah, I think other people are just like that. So it does create an illusion of naivety when really it's just overestimating and having too high expectations. Like, I literally expect people to be able to put things in the past and not want to kill me over something that's stupid. And people have literally threatened my life and made my life a living hell over things that were stupid. And I had to come to terms with the fact that people just are really weird, and I need to figure out what to do with that. So you guys looking at my board over here, because I just realized that you guys can see it, and I'm sure someone over there is being nosy for these on video. I know I have audio piece. Yeah, this is just, you know, good governance. Everything is a social experiment. All is true and false at the same time. It kind of goes back to what I was saying about everyone being a scientist, right? Like, everything is about the ego. The world is run by the egos of people who have either amassed a lot of money, amassed a lot of knowledge, and more than likely both. And they all work together in concert to try to create these social constructs. And some of them are good people trying to do good things. Most of them start out as good people trying to do good things. 99 times out of 10, or 99 times out of 100, the people who stay the longest become corrupt. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Power itself just corrupts. But absolute power that these people are dealing with corrupts absolutely. It does every time. We see it in every historical anecdote of an emperor, of a king, of any monarch, any empire, any dynasty. We see in history, absolute power corrupts absolutely, which is why the founders designed America to be decentralized in the way that it was, even if it was founded during a time where Europeans thinking that it was up to them, because they figured out how to be the best thieves and pillagers and rapists and warriors on the planet. Even though they thought freedom was just for them, freedom is still freedom. And it's not, and just for, you know, the political note, because people, you know, that's what I do. Freedom, the problem is the founders founded a country based on universal ideals that worked for them only. And the problem with the left is that they're trying to get back at the white man and say, well, no, it's for everyone else, but it's only for everyone else if it looks the way we want it to. And it's like, okay, well, now you've become the oppressor, and we really need you guys to figure that out so you can stop ruining everything. And conservatives are just like, depending on which one you talk to, it's like, we all want freedom for everyone. particularly ourselves. And they align with the founders in that wanting freedom for ourselves individually, popular sovereignty. But it's interesting because no matter what people look like, whether they're Latino, whether they're from India, whether they're black, white, male, female, we all want this freedom. We want this freedom for ourselves, just in the likeness of the founders who wanted that freedom and wanted that freedom for themselves. It's actually an interesting mirror image of the founding fathers of this country. They're trying to put aside the things that happened in the past and the atrocities that happened in the past to make sure everyone who aligns as a conservative has that access to freedom, unless you're like a religious right and you want to low-key be a theocracy. However, there is this universal morality, thou shalt not kill, right? And the whole abortion debate is, at what point does abortion become murder? Because if you kill a pregnant woman, double homicide, right? So at what point does abortion itself become murder? Because at the end of the day, you are killing what is human life or has the potential to become human life. So morally, where do we draw the line on making that decision? And most people, right and left, say rape, incest, and to protect the life of the mother or the fetus, or if the fetus is inviable, those are all reasonable, universal exceptions. As far as if you had an abortion ban, those are reasonable exceptions. Those are reasonable reasons to gag an abortion. But you have the extreme left, the feminists, who are mainly white women, saying, well, I just want to do whatever I want to do because I don't want anyone telling me what to do. Yeah. Fucking bitches. Anyway, their agenda of having no responsibility of life is dangerous. And whenever I decide to come back and do another podcast episode, I think I'll make it about that. But to just kind of wrap this up for everyone, and I like how this just kind of came full circle, right? Like, at what point do we understand that all of life is a science experiment? And when it comes to things like abortion, use your conscience. Choose with your conscience. At what point is abortion murder? Because at some point, it is. It just is. If you can't kill your child because you couldn't, it's illegal to kill your child when it's outside the womb because you couldn't afford to take care of it. It's illegal to abandon your child outside the womb because you decided you didn't want it. So you can't suddenly say, well, it's legal and it's okay because it's inside the womb and I couldn't afford it and I didn't want it. Right? Like, at some point, it's still murder, whether it's inside the womb or outside the womb, right? That's why we have this framework of, well, at what point in the pregnancy term, and how do we define what it is and is murder? What is your mens rea? What is your motive? What is your why? Right? And that's why the Women's Health Protection Act goes too far, because they're trying to take out any kind of responsibility or any kind of accountability for women who want to go around. Because we can't act as, I went to high school with a girl that used abortion as birth control. Anytime she got pregnant, she just went and got an abortion. She was 16 years old, had 5 abortions before even getting out of high school. I remember what she looked like. It's not appropriate for me to say her name, but I have seen it myself, right? In what we call the hood. Because though I didn't live in the actual projects, I lived around a lot of people. The Stone Mountain became overrun with people who lived in the hood and wanted a better life. And then a lot of spoiled kids in the suburbs who just wanted to be able to take on that hood life. Atlanta is a big old city in the middle of the country with a whole lot of hood and country folks in it. So itself is, like I said, it's one of the largest human trafficking, sex trafficking hubs on the planet. It's just the culture. That's just what it is. And I despise the fact that we glorify that culture as if it's black culture. Although if you go into history and you look at the Ottoman Empire and the Barbary Pirates and how current American beauty standards are based on the European sex slaves from the Ottoman Empire, then one could say that, well, America is very on brand for the culture and the Ottomans and the Mediterranean, and that's another podcast within itself. But thanks for listening to me today. It's my birthday. Hopefully I'll get this up tonight. If not, I'll get it up tomorrow, June 30th, but this is a birthday episode, so whenever you listen to it, just know that it was recorded on my birthday. Thanks so much. Talk to you guys later.
Peace.